Rachel, something is up in the cellar.
Amen, Uncle Ty. Amen.
We're going up the mountain to do some camping.
Only a fool would do that.
We got five of them in here.
At least tell me where you're going, so that when you don't come back, I'll know how to fill out the report.
Somebody broke into the campus.
Get easy, man. What happened?
What is trying to get you, man?
Demons.
Lawyer never said anything about people up here.
I was in the water and I felt a hand and I saw you on the shore, so the hand wasn't you.
Jonathan, there's someone in that lake and it wasn't you.
Calm down, honey.
The raccoon stole some of my makeup.
Our friend was killed.
Can't find the others.
All right, I found my caramel cream.
It's been a murder. My nephew, Rachel.
Get off this land. You got no business here, Skadoot. Gonna raise the devil now.
Oh, Daniel, take me. Take me right here in the graveyard.
They're dead, Warren.
Megan and Daniel, they're not dead. He's lost.
I told you not to come up here.
This is Caitlin O'Haney, the final girl from He Knows You're Alone, and you're listening to Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to Hysteria Continues, episode 94, so we're getting up to the 100 mark, and we have a feeling this show may be a little bit stuttery because Skype is not being very cooperative today, so...
It's being a cunt.
Oh, Eric... I was trying to avoid the C word. At least it didn't stutter when you said that. Not yet. Mm-hmm. But yes, Skype is not being our friend today. So we're going to persevere and see how we go. But it could be a little bit like a 80s remix or a Duran Duran's Reflex, maybe. Which,
oh, yeah.
Eric, I'm sure you would love. Anyway, Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing good because I found my caramel cream. I mean, it doesn't match my nails, but it'll have to do.
Very good. There we go. It's the reflex episode. Joseph, how are you doing?
Nile Rodgers has produced this episode.
Joseph, are we there? Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay.
And I am doing well.
You are. Good. Well, we're going to talk about your upcoming project in a minute and Nathan as well. But Nathan, how are you doing?
Good.
Okay, a man of few words, but
I think that's what we'll have to be to avoid the stuttering.
I know.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do.
Right. Well, before we start, the Indiegogo campaign has started for Gory Graduation. So, Joseph and Nathan, do you want to talk a little bit about your plans and what goodies you have for people to tempt them into backing your new movie?
We have lots of goodies. I'm trying to be very selective with my words, so I don't that kind of thing. But basically, we're trying to raise about 30 grand, which probably won't happen because you know how it goes. But we're hopeful. We've been up for about a little over 24 hours, and we're right at 1,000 already. So we're doing fairly well. Let's see, if you want to pick something for the show, you have a chance, you can do that. There's posters, DVDs from Vinegar Syndrome, movie credits, et cetera, et cetera. Just look us up on Facebook. It's Gory Graduation. We do have a meeting with an actual high school. We have an inn there and, we are fully cast, et cetera, et cetera. We're just really looking forward to making the film. We hope, slasher fans will get behind us, as it were, and, you know, throw a little into the pot. And if you can't do that, just send the link to everyone you know.
Very good. And when are you hoping to start shooting, Nathan? Oh, sorry. Or Joseph?
Oh, I didn't hear you say my name.
Mm.
We're still shooting for late summer.
Okay. Well, yeah. Sounds good. Well, lots of good perks there, and say it was very popular last time, people choosing films to make us watch. And let's face it, it can't be as bad as Nathan's next pick. So do your worst.
Nothing
your best.
Can.
No. So, well, that's good. Well, you're going to keep us up to date, aren't you, in each show, you know, where you're up to and any developments. So we shall look forward to that. And also, you've got the Facebook page, haven't you, with lots of pre kind of shooting concept art.
Oh yeah, and if you like any of that artwork, you can pledge for it.
Cool. Excellent. Well, that's good. And so I look forward to hearing a bit more about that. But our feature presentation is Jeff Liebman's Just Before Dawn, which I think was your pick, Eric, wasn't it?
It is indeed, yes.
Okay, so we
will. It's our 4-year anniversary.
Is it? Is it this one?
Yes, it is.
What is that? Is that paper or lace or?
It's Just Before Dawn.
Latex.
Well, yes, that would be very appropriate. But before we come on to that, we're going to have a talking point from Nathan coming up, and we're going to discuss which of our slasher franchises is the best. Is that right, Nathan?
It doesn't necessarily have to be slasher, but okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. But before we do that, well, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching over the last couple of weeks. So, Joseph, would you like to go first?
I would love to go first, except I haven't really been watching a whole lot of horror films, unfortunately. We got into someone mentioned this. I don't know if it was in a past feedback, but honestly, there's just not been a whole lot, you know, out new. So there's just not been a whole lot to watch.
Okay. Well, short and sweet. Nathan, how about you?
I watched The Boy Next Door, the new Jennifer Lopez movie.
Hmm.
The thriller, I guess. It's and this is one I think Joseph should definitely watch because it's one of those From Hell movies, and it follows it follows every From Hell cliche that you can think of. But the movie is actually very entertaining. It's very ridiculous. It's, you know, I cracked up several times at scenes that are probably not supposed to be funny. And it's also got some great lines in it. Have you guys seen the trailer for it?
No, I'm aware of it. I don't know if it's out.
Well, is it? Here, the gist of it, and this is not spoiler because it's just the way it is, but, you know, she's separated from her husband, and this, like, really hot young guy moves in next door, and he seems perfect in every way. And one night, one thing leads to another during a thunderstorm, and they end up having sex. And of course, she wants to break it off, and he's a psychopath. But, she's trying to keep this secret from her ex-husband, because they're soon to be ex-husband, they're thinking about getting back together. And the guy has so many, like, funny one-liners that are just so over the top. Like, you know, in one point, they're all at the dinner table, and she asks her husband, because he was out of town with their son, she's like, "Did it rain any where you were at?" And he's like, "No, it was dry as a bone." And then the psycho guy's like, "Really? It was plenty wet here." It's just full of stupid lines like that. I love the movie. I thought it was very entertaining.
Cool. Well, that sounds good. It'd be one to watch. Yeah, I heard it was very much like said, if you wanted to watch an updating of those kind of early 90s thrillers.
Oh, it's definitely, yeah. I mean, it really reminded me of, you know, a lot of the, like, Hand That Rocks the Cradle and, you know, Paperboy and all, and all, like, funny thrillers from those time frames.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, thank you, Nathan. Anything else?
No, that's all I've been watching.
Okay. Well, Eric, what about you?
Okay, well, I watched Supernova, which has just come out on Blu-ray from Scream Factory, and this is the much-maligned sci-fi horror movie from 2000 directed by Thomas Lee, which is the pseudonym that directors use when they want their name removed from the credits. But the original director, we all know, is Walter Hill. Then Jack Shoulder came in to do some reshoots, and finally Francis Ford Coppola did some tinkering during the editing process, so it is very much a mishmash. But having said that, I really like the film. It's about a medical crew in deep space who answer a distress call and rescue this sole survivor from a mining colony, and he has some Dayglo alien in his possession with mystical powers. It's a bit of a car crash of a movie, as you can expect from its troubled production history, but I actually really, really enjoy it. I'm probably the only person in the world who does. zero gravity sex in it, which is there is some in Moon, at the end of Moonraker, the James Bond movie, but I think that that's the only zero gravity sex I've seen before or since. And there's on the Blu-ray, actually, there's the special features are sparse, but there is a great behind the scenes featurette where they discuss, you know, what went wrong and how the film was basically being filmed before it was being written, more or less. So that was it's a thumbs up for me for Supernova. I know it's definitely one that Nathan wouldn't enjoy, but I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No, it's one I haven't. I watched Event Horizon again, relatively recently.
It wouldn't be dissimilar to Event Horizon.
Yeah, no, I don't. What about you, Joseph? Have you seen it?
No, I've not seen Supernova, but I do love Event Horizon. That's an excellent film.
No, it's a great film. Yeah, Super. Is it Angela Bassett in?
Angela Bassett, James Spader, the guy who played the bisexual guy on My So-Called Life is in there. Can't think of his name.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a decent cast in there, but it's very silly, but yeah, very entertaining. And there's some great deleted scenes actually that would have made the film even better if they'd left them in. I don't know why they were removed, but. The other film I watched this week, I think it's one that Joseph had mentioned a few months back. You saw it in the theaters, Ouija, which is the teen horror movie about a group of friends who try and contact a girl that they all know who's recently committed suicide. They use the Ouija board as the title and are subsequently hunted down by this mysterious force. I mean, the film has been getting quite meh reviews. Joseph, you had seen it, hadn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was expecting it to be dull, but I was surprised that I found it relatively entertaining. Now, I say relatively entertaining, it's not something I'd watch again, and I don't think I would recommend it, but what I did like about it was that the victims' demises are quite eerie and effective. What happens is their eyes go completely white, like the possessed people in The Evil Dead. Their mouths appear sewn shut, and then they just kind of evaporate in this cloud of dust, much like in the US remake of Pulse, that the Japanese movie from the mid-2000s. It was quite lightweight, but as I said, I went in expecting it to be awful, and it turned out to be mildly entertaining, and I certainly enjoyed it much more than The Babadook in terms of new releases. So Ouija, not one to recommend, but I don't think it's as awful as I thought it was going to be.
Okay, well, you're probably the lone critic, aren't you, Eric, who preferred...
Sorry?
You're probably the lone critic who preferred Ouija to the Babadook.
No, but I think... Oh, well, preferred it to the Babadook, yeah. But yeah. Nathan chimed in there saying he liked Ouija.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. I mean, I'm like Eric. You know, I don't think it's one I'm ever going to rewatch, but it's one of those movies where I don't think it was boring. I just thought it was really bad. But by bad, I meant, like, funny bad. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but Eric, do you remember the final battle at the end when a certain character suddenly returns to help?
Yes.
It is so stupid and funny. And I was about to laugh till I cried over that scene.
Yeah. And there's a good head bashing on a sink scene as well that was kind of silly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds... I shall get that out at some point. But anything else?
I watched The Guest, but I think you're probably going to talk about that, are you? It's one that Joseph and Nathan recommended to us.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's talk about that now, because do you want to put your opinion?
Well, yeah. It was very much in the mold of those From Hell movies that Nathan was just talking about, I found. I probably didn't like it as much as Joseph and Nathan did, although... But I did like it. I did think it was really, really entertaining. It is, as you say, it's for me, I wouldn't class it as a horror movie. It's one of those From Hell thriller movies where, and I can completely see where you were saying something like he was supposed to be channeling Robert Patrick from Terminator 2 in his performance, and I could certainly see that. I think the last 15 minutes are terrific, where it's all set in not a funhouse, but a school gymnasium that's been set up to look like a funhouse for a prom or for a school disco or something. And it's that's where the Dario Argento comparisons come in with all the surreal lighting and weird effects. Highly, highly entertaining, and I would highly recommend it. It's not one I would probably end up buying myself, but I did enjoy it, yes. What did you think, Justin?
Yeah, well, I to be honest, I was... I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I think my expectations were too high for it, so I thought it was very well made, but to be honest, if for rewatchability, I would watch Your Next over The Guest. I did like it, and I liked the whole 80s feel to it, and it was very well done. And I think you, Nathan and Joseph, did warn us that it wasn't really a slasher movie, even though it had been painted as such in some circles. So I think that colored it. I mean, I thought it was very well done. I didn't really get, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention closely enough, what he was actually doing there. Beyond his original, you know, saying he was going to pay his respects to the family.
I don't understand what his goal was either.
No.
Yeah.
Well, his goal, I don't want to spoil it. Like, I feel like if I'm giving you his goal, we're kind of spoiling some twists in that movie.
Well, tell us after.
Yeah, we'll talk after we were finished recording.
Okay. I did really like the lead female, the sort of, quote, final girl in the movie. Her little brother might have needed a slap at times, but she was really a good character.
He did get beat up a lot.
well, then he got his desserts, yeah.
But no, I thought Dan, it must have been quite surreal watching Dan Stevens go from Downton Abbey to The Guest. I never watched Downton Abbey. But,
he was one of like a very proper, you know, kind of British guy on Downton Abbey because he was one of the rich family members. Mm. So,
is he a British actor?
Yes, he is.
All right.
He was doing he said that for this role, he had his friend who's from Kentucky basically read out loud to him, and he was trying to mimic that accent.
I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed he was British if I didn't know.
So, well, that was a guest. So I'd recommend it. As I say, I think I preferred Your Next out of...
Yeah, I would prefer Your Next as well. But I think we all agree that The Guest was a highly entertaining movie. Yeah.
Absolutely. And another,
but I think you guys need to try what he did. You need to try a Southern US
accent. What, killing people? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
What, try an accent? Like that.
Yeah, you need to like do like him and do like a whole podcast with a different accent.
I'm really bad at accents.
No, you're not, Justin. Go on, do one.
No, not
yeah.
We won't. Yeah. We won't laugh. No, honest.
I will try and practice honest. One for next time. How about that? But what I was going to talk, there was another film that I saw, which we've spoken about at some length, so I won't go on about too much, which was The Purge: Anarchy.
Finally
caught up with that. And again,
I haven't seen that.
No. I was a little bit disappointed in it, if I'm honest. I thought it was fun. If anything, I thought the first film was more like a modern thriller, whereas I thought the sequel was very much like an 80s action movie, and that in itself isn't a bad thing at all, obviously. But I didn't find it. It was an action movie, whereas the first film was a horror movie. And I think that was the distinction. I thought the sequel kind of lost that kind of edge. Although, to be honest, it was probably in some ways more entertaining. It's if you put your brain on neutral and watch it and just think you're watching an 80s, you know, sort of Italian action, you know, video, you know, a VHS release from 1983, then, you know, or a Mad Max ripoff, then that's the way to watch it. But I kind of miss the slightly more macabre elements of the first film, although they're still there. It's a bit more cartoonish, so I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but that's how I felt.
No, I would agree, because you know, I mean, the first one is more of a horror than the second. You know, the second's a very suspense action, like you said. The one scene that I loved is the one where, you know, Justin, they hide out at the apartment of some friends of the one woman's.
Yeah.
And it's one of those situations where everything's going normal, but something's going to happen, but you don't know what and who's going to be the one to basically do something.
It was kind of a clever piece of misdirection, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So that was good. Just rattling through a few others. There's a film that Patrick from Scream Queens mentioned he'd watched and piqued my interest. And it's a found footage movie called, well, not a found footage, but it's a type of found footage movie called The Conspiracy. Has anyone seen it?
I have.
Oh, you have? Okay. So
yes.
Yeah. It's basically, it was quite an intriguing premise. It's this idea of these documentary filmmakers are following or interviewing this conspiracy theorist who has all these way out, you know, he just thinks, basically sees a conspiracy in absolutely everything. So it was, they're making a documentary about truthers, you know, people who are constantly looking for what they term is the truth, like things like 9/11 and all sorts of things. And then the guy they're interviewing vanishes, and they go out to try and find find out where he is, more so much as they take all of his research and try and piece it together to try and work out what he was getting at. And they discover this shadowy group of businessmen who meet, and every time they meet there's a global, there's something like 9/11 or like the stock market crashes or anything like that. So they find this conspiracy and they try and infiltrate this kind of secret group, and it kind of follows them through. And the thing, it kind of works. I actually really liked it. I thought it was really well done. And but it plays with the whole thing about, is it really a conspiracy or is it not? And it oscillates between yes, it is, no, it isn't, yes, it is. And it's, I thought it was quite clever. What did you think, Joseph?
Oh, I agree with you. I love the build up, but I love the last, 20 minutes even more. I think, that's some of the best suspense I've seen in any film in a long time. Mm. What I did like about the film, and I guess this isn't really major spoilers, it's just kind of light spoilers, is that, there's two guys doing the documentary, and I like the idea that they're both kind of like, conspiracies. They're just what they are, is conspiracies. But one of the guys basically just kind of becomes the guy they're interviewing because he starts believing these conspiracies so much. I like that angle to the film.
Yeah, I really like the way it kind of, like say, oscillated between the it actually is a conspiracy, and no, it's not. And at the end of the movie, you're still not really sure what's happened. And I thought that was quite clever. So that was a recommend. The other, last night we had a creature double feature, a double bill of The Uninvited, Graydon Clark's mutant cat on a yacht with 80s teenagers movie.
And George Kennedy.
And George Kennedy. And Clue Gallagher. And the other guy, his name I can't remember, but which is one of my favourite knowingly bad movies, I kind of guess. So if you've never seen The Uninvited, I think it's from 87, but it's got basically a glove puppet attacking teenagers on a yacht. And one of the worst model boats sinking since Humongous. But there was that, and also on a double bill with Empire of the Ants, which is Joan Collins and Polyester being attacked by giant ants, which is you know, a really fun movie, isn't it? It's not really a horror movie as such, but it's like a classic 70s kind of adventure sort of with horror elements. But
I would call it a horror movie.
Well, I kind of guess it is. It's not particularly horrific, is it? I mean, it's not like it's not a gore.
No.
You know, it's not like Grizzly or one of the other kind of more horror. But I thought it's a very entertaining movie, and you can see Joan Collins all the way thinking, I need to fire my agent. Although having said that, she was making films like The Stud and The Bitch, wasn't she, at that time? And come through in the 1970s by making sex dwarf films like I Don't Want to Be Born and things like that. So maybe she actually relished being attacked by giant ants. I don't know. But yeah, that was a fun film. Have you, Eric and Nathan, presumably you are familiar with that movie?
Oh, yes, I have both on DVD, yeah.
Mm.
Mm.
Big fan of both.
Excellent. And also,
I love Joan Collins.
She was very good. She was very intelligent. She was quite bitchy in it and got a comeuppance. But and to finish the evening off, Argento came in from outside with a shitty bottom as a
full
stop to the evening, so I had to chase him around the house with a wet wipe. So anyway, that's how we roll in our house. So
I didn't need to know that.
Well, I know. I just thought I'd let you know.
I hope he flushed the toilet after him.
Well, he's trying to get in at the moment. It's like being in like a 90s, one of those 90s thrillers, because he's outside the door, kind of scratching, trying to get in. But I know if I let him in, he'll eat my headphones, so I can't. So anyway,
it's like a Salvador Dali painting in your house.
What an asshole.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we have to get these pet wipes because he quite often comes in, you know, looking a bit.
I feel sick.
Anyway, let's move on from my cat's incontinence issues to Nathan's talking point of the week.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I look forward to hearing what you guys have chosen. Basically, I'm wondering, and like I said, this can be horror, but what horror, like, series of films overall, and I mean series of films being in more than one sequel, do you think is just collectively the best? For me, I just heard myself. I go with the Slumber Party Massacre series because I can't even tell you which one I love the most because I really feel that they're all equally amazing. I love every single one of them. I mean, they're classic slasher films. You know, they've got everything that I look for in a slasher film. You know, and I love the drill as a murder weapon. And, you know, every movie uses the drill. Like, they do not try to go away from the formula. And that's why I like those movies. It's a driller killer using his drill on girls at a slumber party. We don't have to get anything above and beyond that. Even though the sequel does get kind of kooky, you know, it still follows that formula too. So I still love it just as equally. Okay? Did somebody else talk or am I hearing myself again?
No, I was going to say okay. That I thought, for me, I couldn't think of a sequel that was more out there than Slumber Party Massacre Part 2.
The Exorcist 2?
Well, I'm talking about from a slasher.
But for
horror, then yes, certainly with that. But it's kind of taking what was the first film's kind of very much based in a kind of reality, isn't it? Although it's... You know, well, it's kind of based in reality, whereas the sequel is very much not. But it's good choice, Nathan. And also because there's only three really, isn't there? And ultimately, only three films in the series. Yeah. It didn't have too much of a chance to fuck it all up.
Well, and I did think the last Slumber Party was like a fourth sequel to it when I finally watched it, but I realized that it's its own movie.
Yes, thankfully. It is.
Well, I mean, it's good. I mean, if they could have used a drill in it, then it would have been a welcome addition, but they used a scalpel.
A scalpel and a thimble full of fake blood, I think it was.
So what about you, Justin?
Well, I thought long and hard about this.
Did you?
But to be honest, I'm going to be very Catholic in my choices, if you can calling the Friday the 13th a series a kind of Catholic choice. I tried to think of things because I know people are choosing other things, and I thought, well, Halloween after I'm not a huge fan of part 4 and 5, regardless, and 6 and onwards. I mean, they're watchable, you know. Don't get me wrong. Nightmare on Elm Street again, past parts 3 and 4, I'm not particularly interested, apart from like New Nightmare. You know, it very much went off the boil for me. Whereas the Friday the 13th series, I think, had the longest of a good run, basically, up to even Jason Takes Manhattan is entertaining in its own way. I mean, after that, it kind of, you know, lost its way. But I think for rewatchability for me, the Friday the 13th sequels from 2 to 6, say, are the ones I would have watched the most. Even, you know, I found a kind of grudging, not acceptance, but affection for part 5, perhaps. So, you know, I can enjoy it more. I still don't think it's a good film. I don't think it's a good Friday the 13th sequel, but it's entertaining in its own right. So Friday the 13th series is probably, out of all of the horror series, is the most consistently entertaining for me. So there you go.
Yeah, and I should say that was going to be my original choice until I thought of the Slumber Party movies, because, like you said, Friday the 13th had the longest run of being consistently entertaining. To me, it wasn't until they tried to get crazy in the 90s with it that I lost interest.
Yeah.
So what about you, Joseph?
Well, I was originally going to go with Friday the 13th as well, but if we're talking about just consistency, you know, like you said, after I'd say after, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan, they did lose its way. So I'm going with the Final Destination films, which I've liked every single one. This one I like a little less than the rest, but I still like it. But, you know, I think it's a very consistent series. It's you know, wildly entertaining and graphic and gory and just a lot of, you know, silly kind of high thrills, popcorn fun. They haven't let me down yet, and I kind of wish they'd, you know, make a sixth film. Maybe they will someday, but, you know, so far, as far as movies that have a good film in every single film in the series, I'd say Final Destination for me.
Okay.
Yeah, good choice. I love those movies, and I love the fifth one. You know, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but the ending to the fifth one I thought was very clever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Eric?
Well, Final Destination I would have to totally agree with, because all five films are incredibly watchable. Having said that, I only own one of them, and that happens to be Part 4. Mainly because it was out around the time I first got a Blu-ray player, and I just purchased it then. It came with 3D glasses, so the anaglyph ones, so you could watch it without it necessarily having a 3D television. But yeah, all five of those are really consistent. But I'm going to have to side with Justin on this one. I'll have to say Friday the 13th, mainly because I find Parts 1 to 8 really rewatchable, more so Parts 1 to 4, which I can watch on a loop, really, and never tire of. 5, 6, 7, 8, if I'm in the right mood, I can really, really, I can quite enjoy. 9, 10, and Freddy versus Jason, I wouldn't be terribly fond of, and they do kind of, you know, sour things a little for the Friday the 13th series, and the remake as well, obviously, it's ghastly. But, yeah, in terms of you know, certainly Parts 1 to 4, they didn't, you know, they found a winning formula and they didn't bother shifting away from it at all, which is what I really admire about them. So, yeah, Friday the 13th for me.
It's always a good choice. It makes me wonder, as far as the classic horror series, what movie in them is the one that made you not pick it? As in, like, for me, like, Halloween, you know, I love 1 and 2 and I find 3 to be entertaining, but Part 4 would be the one that kind of threw it off for me.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I completely agree. Yeah. 4 is, I find 4 more or less unwatchable, and I love 1, 2, and 3, but there's no sequel that compares to them really after that. So
yeah, I agree. And Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, I love 1, 2, and 3, and 4 has its moments, but Part 5 is, I mean, I still like it, but it's really out there.
Yeah, I like Part 5 as well. It's Part 6 that really does nothing for me. And also, I'm probably the only person in the world. I don't like New Nightmare. I'm sorry. I know.
You said that before, Eric, and everyone's taken a collective gasp.
Yes, I know.
I don't think New Nightmare is as good as everyone says it is, but I like it. But I prefer the first 3 films in that series overall. 4, like Nathan said, has its moments, but boy, 5 is where they really started, you know, kind of dropping the ball with Freddy.
Mm-hmm. I admit I still like 5. It's just, you know, it doesn't hold up as well to me as the others. And then Part 6 is where it really goes off the rails.
I did wonder about, because I've not seen Part 6 since I saw it at the cinema.
No, it hasn't aged well at all, believe me.
It didn't age. It didn't age particularly well back then, even when it just came out. It was, especially the sorriest excuse for 3D at the end. You know, that was a real cheap trick, really, wasn't it?
But it is. It's an awful film, man. It's boring.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think they just, I read Robert England autobiography that came out a few years ago while I was on holiday last summer. And it was surprising, actually, how cheap those movies were, even when they were making, you know, $40, $50, $60 million at the box office. That he said even then they were still really cheap shoots compared to a lot of other films that have been coming out at the time. And at least with Friday 13th, you've got a set thing, you get kids in the woods and you kill them. You can do that relatively cheaply, and you don't have to have big splashy special effects. But with the Nightmare on Elm Street series, it felt like they literally ran out of steam because they were making one every single year, pretty much just to keep the cash cow going. And it just basically Freddy got sillier and sillier, didn't he? So till he became a cartoon character, and there was only one way for that to end, really, wasn't there? And so
in tears.
I should say that Sleepaway Camp, if the fourth one did not exist, it would have been a very close contender. The series would be with Slumber Party Massacre for me, because I love the first three, but the fourth one just ruined it.
Hmm. Well, fair enough. Okay, well, that was Nathan's algorithm table of the week.
Algonquin.
That's the one. So, thank you, Nathan. Anything else you'd like to say on your talking points?
I love horror movies.
Okay, well, thank you for that. So, I think it's probably time for us to go into the backwoods of Oregon. What do you think?
I think so.
Okay. Yes. Well, here is the trailer for 1981's Just Before Dawn.
Run for your life. The nightmare has begun. It will find you in the hour when dream and reality merge. The last desperate moment of darkness.
All right, who is it?
Just before dawn. They were warned.
At least tell me where you're going, so that when you don't come back, I'll know how to fill out the report.
But they did not understand the warning.
Tell me what you see.
They came to the mountain adventure and escape. What they found was a trial which only the strongest could survive. How could they know that beneath the awesome beauty of nature lay violence, danger, and death?
You've seen all the blood.
How could they know the heat of their bodies was the magnet that would draw the terror to them?
No more devils. No more. No more nothing out there. Just God, little creature.
You saw them kids?
I seen them. Down by the lake. I see your kid.
I had a good mind to just let them have their due.
Just before dawn comes horror. Just before dawn comes death. Rated R.
Five friends set out for a weekend camping excursion to drink, frolic, and skinny dip on an isolated piece of land one of them has inherited. Despite ominous warnings from local forest ranger, brackets George Kennedy, airport death ship, strange backwoods families, and a hollering drunken hunter, brackets Justin Kurzweil, the hysteria continues, claiming to have witnessed his friend's evisceration by the hands of demons, they trek further into the foliage. Beautifully shot, extremely eerie, and with a horrifying twist that will make you wonder, will any of them survive those dark hours just before dawn? That's the blurb from the Blu-ray of Just Before Dawn, which was released, I think, last year by Code Red. Just Before Dawn has been a favourite of mine since seeing it in the late 80s. I adore this movie. Its plot, like many of my favourite slashers, is really basic. But Just Before Dawn benefits from having a great cast, a great director, whose previous work would also rank as some of my favourite horror movies. And Blue Sunshine, and possibly one of the most spectacularly gorgeous backdrops ever seen in a slasher movie. I always remember the film as being quite graphic, but in retrospect, watching it again this week, really only the oddly named Vachel's death at the start is the one true moment of gore when he gets a large serrated machete to the groin. And the fisting finale is quite a sight, of course, and possibly maybe bends the rules of reality a bit and believability, but it's not gory as such. In fact, you know, thinking back, a lot of these slasher movies from the golden era seem really tame, especially when you compare them to things like the Hatchet series that you know are around at the moment, which is just wall-to-wall blood and guts even. The other thing I love about the film is the minimalist score by Brad Fiedel. It's one of his earliest assignments. Of course, he went on to, you know, superstardom with the Terminator series. And Jeff Lieberman is quoted as saying that he wanted to rely mostly on the sounds of nature and less on music. And I think that's a masterstroke, because it really does create that out in the woods, miles from civilization kind of ambience. You know, and when the music does come in, it has this eerie chanting and this sort of whistle sound on it. And it's really, really superb. In terms of the characters, I absolutely love the character of Megan, and I think Nathan will probably agree with me on this one. I just love her sort of carefree, cheerleaderish approach to life, you know, her obsession with makeup, and, you know, her exclamations of, "All right, I found my caramel cream. Oh, darling, that Cadillac red is simply you." You know, and I adore her scene in the graveyard with Daniel, where they're doing the photo shoot and they're interrupted, you know, by who they think is Jonathan, but actually turns out to be one of the two killers. Spoiler alert. And to make him jealous, she goes, "Oh, Daniel, take me right here in the graveyard." Reminds me of Justin. And Deborah Benson as Connie is one of
you
my favourites. Oh, I haven't heard that in a while. Deborah Benson as Connie is one of my favorite final girls. I think she's channeling a bit of Amy Steele there, even though, I mean, the film was made before Friday the 13th Part 2, from what I can find out. She starts out as this sort of self-confessed, you know, sissy when faced with danger, but ends up as this feisty, you know, Ripley from Alien-style character. Utterly brilliant, quite eerie in places. Not terribly bloody, but still being quite violent. And it still manages to have that 1981 popcorn slasher feel, in my opinion anyway. So it's not nasty enough to be, you know, disturbing as such. So a classic, in my opinion, up there with Friday the 13th Part 2, Happy Birthday to Me, My Bloody Valentine, all those classics from 81. This is up there with it. Joseph, would you agree?
I would wholeheartedly agree.
Yay.
No, Just Before Dawn is a, you know, a fantastic film. I think, you know, what sets it apart from a lot of the backwoods slasher films from the time is definitely, you know, the direction and the backdrop. And, I kind of like the idea of, these people going into the, you know, into the mountains to kind of camp, you know, as they usually do. I like the idea that they set up this whole kind of, well, I guess it's foreshadowing, because they go in there and they're like, there sure is a lot of twins around here. And he's like, it's inbreeding, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it lends credence to that whole kind of, you know, plot twist halfway through, is when they're at the graveyard and they reveal that there's actually two of these, you know, big behemoth killers. And it's really quite shocking. You know, when I first saw the film, I knew nothing about it except that it was, you know, a backwoods slasher film. You know, in this day and age, if you'd never seen Just Before Dawn, you would have that little plot point ruined for you, especially if you're listening to this episode. But if you're listening to this episode, you shouldn't be. You should have already seen the film. But anyway, I really did love that plot twist when I saw it, because I knew nothing about it. Like I said, I like the backdrop. I think, you know, Lieberman and his crew, they really do capture the woods probably better than any other slasher film I've seen. And I like the cast. I do like the kind of the twist between Connie and her boyfriend, played by Greg Henry. You know, he's the...
Warren.
Yeah, Warren. He's the, you know, he's the male, he's the hero, and she's the... you know, the girl he's going to save, but at the end it's him kind of whimpering and crying, you know, off in a corner somewhere, while she just basically, you know, takes down this this guy who's probably like 6 foot taller than she is. And that fisting finale really is something to behold.
Would you say the fisting finale was better than in Anal Paprika 3?
Well, his mouth is not quite as wide open as some orifice on your body, but
I wasn't in Anal Paprika 3.
Yes, you were. Admit it.
You were 13, weren't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, one thing about this film that's kind of curious to me is George Kennedy. His name is Roy McLean, but he's not lean.
He's the opposite of lean, isn't he?
Yes, but no, seriously, in all seriousness, Just Before Dawn, you know, it really is probably, if not the best backwoods slasher film ever made, it's right up there. It's, you know, it's gorgeous to look at. You know, it's well-directed, well-acted. It even has a Blondie song on the soundtrack, so, I mean, you can't really go wrong anywhere.
Love a bit of Blondie.
Yeah.
Nathan, over to you.
I absolutely love Heart of Glass. And I do love that they use that song in the film. No, I love Just Before Dawn. I thought it starts out very creepy. You know, I thought the scene is in the abandoned church, especially when he looks up and sees the killer staring at him. I mean, that's a very creepy scene, you know. And of course, like you said, I mean, the machete to the groin, especially since they go the extra step of just showing it come out, you know. Come out of the guy, you know. I mean,
yeah,
it looks extremely painful.
The sound effects in that scene are really good too, because you can hear it like, just sliding in, and he's just, like,
it's awful. But no, I mean, I love the film. You know, I love woods. You know, the woods is a setting for movies anyway, and so I think they did a really good job of making the woods seem very creepy and secluded. You know. You know, Jeff Lieberman did a great job with that. I've always been fascinated with the character of Connie, you know, just because throughout the movie, she's more tomboyish. And then at the end, when she actually, you know, faces the killer, you know, she's like, she looks very feminine. You know, like it's kind of like her transformation throughout the film as well. And I thought it was very fascinating that the director, you know, kind of went that route with her. But it definitely makes her a more memorable heroine. And yes, Eric's right. Of course, I love Jamie Rose in this movie. I think she's fantastic. I love all the characters in the movie, you know. I thought, you know, it's very well written. And I watched this with Grant years ago. And the scene where, Jamie Rose and Christopher Lemon are in the water together and you see the killer, like, behind the waterfall. Come into the water. Greg about fell out of his chair when that scene happened. He was like, "Oh my God, did you see that? Did you see that?" I was like, "Yep, I saw that." But I love the twist, and you know, I guess we kind of already spoiled it, but I love the twist of, you know, they're twins, and you know, you think you've gotten one of them, and really the other one was still there. You know, that was a great little twist in the movie. Let's see. I mean, the soundtrack. That's what else I wanted to mention. I love the soundtrack to this movie. It's you know, it just adds to the atmosphere in the film. And did you guys notice at the beginning, they even mention twins? It's kind of foreshadowing when they're driving up and, you know, Ralph Seymour sees the twins. And, you know, he even asks, like, why are there so many twins up here? And it's just kind of, like, laughed off by the group. And I thought it was neat to kind of put that in as a way to foreshadow what's going to happen.
I did mention
that. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I apologize that I might have missed that. Now, our voices sound so much alike. I thought that was me talking.
It was.
In your head.
Yeah.
But I agree with Nathan, too. You know, I like that scene in the movie.
You also have to remember, it's very, very early here.
Yes, it is. It's.
And I did not sleep last night.
We're not quite awake, and I'm at work. So, we're out of it.
But, okay, so I agree with Joseph. That's the bottom line there.
Yes.
Did anyone notice the foreshadowing at the beginning where Ralph is taking pictures of the twins and he notices that there are a lot of twins around there?
No, I didn't see that.
No?
I don't remember that.
Alan Dale was in Neighbours.
I was about to say that. You stole it.
That could be. This could be our new Alan Dale's in Neighbours line, since we haven't used that in so long. Oh, and it could... It could also take the place of the girl with the giant hair that gets turned into a cockroach.
I love her.
All Justin jokes. Mm.
Yeah. Justin, yes, what did you think of Just Before Dawn?
Justin Before Dawn, yes. Very good. Very good. That's probably going to be better than Eric's joke of the week, but we should wait. We'll see. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be a unanimous thumbs up all across the board, I think, because I've always loved Just Before Dawn, and I would agree that it's one of the best slash movies of 1981. In fact, it's probably one of the, I would say it's probably in my top 10 slash movies of the early 80s or the golden age of the slasher movie. So I think it's that good. It's a film, it was obviously, I think, because I interviewed Jeff Lieberman many years ago. In fact, he's the first person I interviewed for Hysteria Lives. And he basically denied he'd seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although he did base the rewritten script on Deliverance a little bit. But film, I thought it actually had felt more like was Rituals, of having that slightly kind of the weird, you know, the whole kind of other worldly feel to the woods. And I think it is all down to the soundtrack, pretty much, and the gorgeous cinematography, because that whole chanting kind of weird sort of, and the whistle and everything is quite, it just gives that feeling of kind of awe and spookiness you feel genuinely when you're in the woods, which you don't get in the film like Friday 13th. Friday 13th is the archetypical backwards slasher movie, but the woods themselves are kind of incidental rather than a character. The woods aren't creepy in Friday 13th, whereas they are in Just Before Dawn. I think it's. I mean, you've spoken about all the standout scenes. The waterfall scene, the killing in the graveyard, and also the fisting at the end, which is just so out of left field, isn't it? And I think for audiences watching this when this came out, would have been, they wouldn't really have, you know. I mean, they'd seen Alice chop off the head of Mrs. Voorhees at the end of Friday 13th, but this took it to another level. Which I thought was really clever. But then that's Jeff Lieberman all over, isn't it? All of his films have a certain sort of other sense. He's very individualistic, or what's the word for it? He sets himself apart from other directors, because essentially the characters in this are your typical spam and a wagon teenagers off to the woods to be killed one by one. But everything else in the film is, you know, and you've got the Crazy Ralph character in George Kennedy, who, you know, is basically aping Crazy Ralph. Although, ironically,
Mike Kellen, do you mean?
No, not so much. No, because I'm talking, the Mike Kellen as well, but also when George Kennedy says, you know, tell me, you know, at least tell me where you're going. Saying don't come, you know, don't go there, you know, don't go into the woods, but. I mean, I think the film was being shot as Friday 13th was released in 1980. So it's probably coincidental with this, although maybe they added bits and pieces in. I don't know the exact thing. I think it's a great film, and it's a way to actually have giggling killers who are actually quite scary and menacing. I think the John Hunsaker as the twins, gave a great performance for what was really a kind of a, you know, a one note kind of characters. They were just giggling monsters basically, but they also were quite creepy, because on the interviews on the edition I've got, they said about shaving off his eyebrows to give him a massive forehead. So lots of things to make him look a bit weird, but yeah, it's a great film. I think it works as a teen slasher movie, you know, through and through, but it's a lot more than that as well. And I think that's why it's so watchable, because I think Jeff Lieberman, when he's been interviewed, said that it's not actually that violent a movie, as you were saying, Eric, when you rewatched it. Surprisingly few deaths, isn't there, really? And it's the first death, and also the death in the graveyard, really are the most violent scenes in the movie. But it's certainly no Friday 13th when it comes to gore
And there's long periods where there nothing, not nothing happens, but there, you know, there's no gore or violence, but it's a good enough film to keep your attention through and through. So yeah, thumbs up all round.
Whoever came up with the idea of having the killers giggle like Muttley from Wacky Races was genius.
You could also you could read into the film that the twins are targeting their victims for specific reasons. Because do you think it's just a coincidence that at the start, is it Ty is his name, and Vachel have just killed a deer, and on their way up to the campsite, the five kids in the wagon accidentally knock over a deer and kill it. Did anyone think that might have been a? Because I mean, the deer killing really has nothing else to do with the plot of the movie. So I'm just wondering if maybe the intention was to imply that these were sort of, this was nature takes revenge in the form of these twins.
Possibly. No? It hadn't occurred to me, but I mean, you could read that into it. I mean, I think Jeff Lieberman was saying that the they were just meant to be not evil, but they were had been so inbred and everything that they were just kind of killing for kicks, basically, and there wasn't an evil thing. It's like their way of hunting. Mm-hmm. I don't. In some ways, it's kind of difficult to know because I'm sure you talk a bit more about the background in a minute. But it's Jeff Lieberman completely rewrote the script, didn't he? Whether or not how much you know thought went into all of it, or it was just literally taking the bare bones of the script of, you know, I think he was told you can make whatever film you want as long as you follow the formula of sending teenagers into the forest or early 20 somethings and killing them. But no, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. I mean, certainly they were. He was talking about how it was kind of he was aping kind of culture, not the kind of primitive culture of taking the token or something from somebody you've killed. Because the twins, every time they kill somebody, they take something from them, don't they? Like the hat, from the and then the whistle and the camera. And it was almost like everything was, it was all a joke to them, perhaps. But yeah, no, it's an interesting point.
Do raccoons really steal makeup?
I don't know. The woman who stole the makeup wasn't very good at putting it on, was it? She looked like Toya.
No, she looked like she was shot by Homer Simpson's makeup gun.
Yeah, like Toya.
Shut up, you. If you push me too far, I'm going to throw myself out the window.
Oh, yeah, Toya looks like a clown whore.
Okay, jump, I'm going to throw myself out the window now. I'm going over to the window.
Jump.
You're not trying to stop me. You're not trying to stop me, Justin. I'm going.
Are you on the first floor? Are you on the ground floor?
No, I'm on the fourth floor.
You're on the fourth floor?
Okay. Yeah, I'm just opening the window now.
Eric, don't. Stop.
I'm going to do it. You're not to stop me.
Eric, Justin, we can't. You're not to stop me. Okay. No, anyway, what were you talking about?
You're not
about?
To stop me.
Eric, this will come. This is a cry for help. Eric, don't jump.
I hate you.
Do it. No, I wasn't. Anyway, Eric, just think about your fans.
Yeah, I know. Millions of them out there.
Yeah, they'd be very upset if you tossed yourself off. So, well, you've got your love beads, haven't you? You've got anal love beads to keep you company, so that's always good.
How dare you?
What? Mm. How dare you? What's Eric just sent a rude message to you?
No.
No, no, I said how dare you because you mentioned anal beads. This is a family podcast.
It's hardly. Well, it's like the Manson family, maybe, but...
And Justin, the photo shoot in the graveyard, did that take you back to your teenage years?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I thought so.
Although, I'd to be honest, there was not enough black there, really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sorry.
No, but she was clutching a bunch of flowers a la Morrissey.
Yeah, did you notice that scene, though, where it was quite ethereal, wasn't it? Everything was, it was very, it was as if it was kind of effect they have if they're trying to do a flashback or, you know, when everything's super bright.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was intentional.
It's very white and hazy.
Yeah, I wonder if that was intentional or it was just accidental. Because I haven't, I've got the old Shriek Show double disc DVD edition. I didn't pick up the more recent Blu-ray edition. So I only, because I'm aware there's an extended cut, isn't there?
And yes.
Has anyone seen that extended cut?
I have watched it. It's, there's no extra scenes of violence or scares as such. It's mostly dialogue.
Okay.
You get more of Ralph Seymour dancing to Blondie. If that's your thing. Probably the most significant additions are that the scene just after the waterfall sequence where Megan has been scared in the lake, and Jonathan's trying to assure her, look, it was probably just a fish, or you probably just a bit of driftwood you knocked off that made you think it was somebody. And she's there saying, look, I don't want to talk about it. And she looks really upset and she gets more and more drunk, and that's when she starts dancing. Because the way the theatrical cut works now is it just goes more or less straight from that scene to her dancing carefree beside the fire as if nothing has happened. Whereas this sort of, sort of getting slower. And the dancing sequence is much longer as well, more boogieing to that Brad Fidel song. I can't remember what the lyrics of it are. It's just, there's just two words. But it's a fantastic song. Also, there's a scene where just after the father shoots the stereo, makes the stereo explode or whatever. Just after that, Warren and Connie have a fight because she wants to leave. And then there's an extended scene the next morning of her apologizing. But apart from that, I mean, there's nothing significant really. It's just extended dialogue, more talk about makeup and things like that.
Do you know if it was the preferred cut of Jeff Lieberman?
I would say not, because it does drag a little. Actually, there's one other significant bit in it. Actually, I was mentioning that the deer seems insignificant to the plot, but the subject comes back up after Connor can't find Jonathan in the lake. Connie says something like, he was murdered, wasn't he? And he says, we don't know that. He probably fell off the rope bridge. And then she questions him about the deer again. She says, the deer is dead, isn't it? You didn't see it run away.
Right.
Hey, so guys, I'm back. What did I miss?
You missed me talking about...
Just a lot of talking
about the extended director's cut, which run... Well, not direct, the international cut, I think it's called, and it runs 12 minutes longer, but it's all dialogue.
Have you gotten into background information yet?
No.
Not yet, not really. No. Okay. We're going that direction shortly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But is there a commentary on there as well? Because there isn't on the Shriek Show.
No. There isn't, no, not on the Blu-ray. There is on the Shriek. Yeah, I have the Shriek Show one as well, and there is a commentary track on that, yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
No.
With Jeff Lieberman.
Okay. Oh, I watched the interviews with Chris Lemon. Is it Chris Lemon? And the woman who played...
Do you think he's bitter about it all?
Bitter? Oh, Eric. Is that your joke of the week?
That could be my joke of the week.
No.
That should have been. You missed it, Eric. You missed a chance.
Yeah.
I did.
There were you saying you couldn't think of anything.
Well, no, I do have a joke. It's just not related to horror movies at all, but it's a cracker.
Okay. Well, shall we stop for Eric's joke of the week? And then once we've done that, we'll come on to some background for the movie. There's a little bit of...
Okay, have you got...
Yes, a little bit of light relief.
My joke of the week,
it's so fantastic. Okay, the entrepreneur who invented the thermally insulated chamber for turning clay into pottery must be very rich now. I mean, he must have made a kiln. Must have made it a kiln.
Eric, why do you make that woman cry every episode?
I didn't want to make her cry. Just to make her happy.
Eric, even your lemon joke was better than that, wasn't it?
No.
I actually really liked your joke.
Did you? What, the kiln?
Oh, I like the kiln joke too.
Yeah, see? Here's a secret.
Here's a very big secret here, and I'm just going to reveal it now. I secretly do like all of Eric's jokes. I don't think he's told one yet that I haven't chuckled at.
Oh, thanks, Nathan. You're my favorite.
Thank you.
Justin, you're not my favorite.
Joseph didn't say anything either.
Yeah, well, Joseph's
probably working.
But no.
I'm just waiting to laugh. Sorry.
Yes, well, that's fair enough. So, okay.
Okay, on to background then. Nathan, what have you got for us? Have you got anything?
Do you guys, I meant to ask you guys, do you guys ask me first because I'm usually the one that has nothing?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I've got something this time.
Yes!
So, in an interview, Jeff Lieberman said that Deborah Benson questioned him as to why she had on like nail polish and makeup at the end of the film. And his explanation for that was, it's war paint. So there you have it. She was gearing up for war.
But that's just what girls do. They just love their makeup. They're mad for it, regardless of whether they're being chased by killers or not.
She wasn't, though. You know, I mean, her character worked the whole movie.
All girls are. All girls are mad about makeup.
Every one of them, eh?
Yeah, and Justin.
And Justin, yeah. Well, Justin had, like, the black lipstick and, you know, like, the dark.
Well, sometimes he goes the girly route as well with caramel cream.
Eric.
Who is the bully? Who is the real bully of the show?
Yeah.
It's Nathan, I think.
I thought the goth look was in when Justin did it. He was, you know, it was cool in the time frame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool or ridiculous? It's a fine line. Joseph, do you have any behind the scenes?
Yes. The film's original script was based on a story by Joseph Middleton, and it was titled The Tennessee Mountain Murders.
Yes, and I always think that sounds like one of Nathan's movies from YouTube. Starring Hazel Tankersley.
Yes. And later it was titled The Last Ritual. It had heavy religious themes behind the twin killers' motives, which director Jeff Lieberman felt were kind of, you know, awful. So he sidestepped that. It also included a sixth camper named Eileen and a different fate for Megan, whatever you want to call her, which entitled her being tossed to her death over a cliff. It also included a climax involving Connie being forced to handle snakes by the inbred villains before becoming one of their wives. This version of the script also had more involvement from the Logan family, who were part of the scene. Lieberman rigorously rewrote the screenplay from page one by himself to eliminate all the kind of religious zones in favor of a more thriller-based plot. And I keep hearing myself repeat, so I apologize. Lieberman was heavily influenced, obviously, by Deliverance while writing the film. Let's see, what else? The film was shot on location in the spring of 1980 at the Silver Falls State Park in Sublimity, Oregon, just outside of nearby Salem, and an hour away from Portland, Oregon. Due to the film's low budget, filming time ranged from 14 to 15 hours per day. The 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens occurred during filming. According to actor Chris Lemon, he and the rest of the cast were gone for the day on a trip to the Oregon coast when the eruption occurred. What else? Despite the authentic weathered appearance, the church used in the opening scene of the film was actually built for the production. You know, Lieberman said that countless strangers showed up at the filming location on the day that the scene with Jamie Rose swimming topless was to be filmed. Lieberman said that the word of this shoot had apparently gotten out among the local forest rangers. And let's see what else. Several odd occurrences happened during the shooting of the film. While shooting in the woods one evening, the lighting went out without explanation, leaving the cast and crew in complete darkness. After several minutes, the producer yelled out, "Let there be light," and the lights immediately returned without explanation. According to Lieberman, despite the numerous reviews of Just Before Dawn that implied it was inspired by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or The Hills Have Eyes, he had not seen either film at the time of making Just Before Dawn. Lieberman also stated that he was influenced by Ingmar Bergman when assembling some of the film's compositions. And finally, the eerie whistling motif heard in Brad Fidel's music score is a reference to the rescue whistle that Warren carries in the film. According to the composer, Brad Fidel, many of the ominous sounds in the music score were actually electronically altered audio clips of himself vocalizing droning noises. And do I have anything else? Yeah, initially Universal Pictures expressed serious interest in purchasing the film, but eventually they backed out. Instead, the film was distributed by Picture Media, a small independent company, just before Dawn was released theatrically in October of 1981 in the United States. It debuted the following month in France, where it was released under the title Survivance, as to emphasize a connection with John Borman's Deliverance. And that's all I have.
Well, that was quite a lot. Justin, yes, do you have any more to add to that?
A few bits and pieces, yes. So the film was made in the summer of 1980. I think Jeff Lieberman says it was shooting in July. And as Joseph said, it was released in October 81. It got a certificate, an R certificate, in October 81. But it was still in release throughout 1982, and it wasn't a particularly big success, I don't know. I don't think. So presumably it had a kind of regional rollout. I think Jeff Lieberman says he saw it in a Florida picture house at some point. The cast said that he partied all the time, and on one occasion they were so hungover that Jeff Lieberman sent them all home. So I can obviously, that's something I empathise with. As far as the cast, George Kennedy was in Death Ship the year before, and then he was in the kind of the semi, well, it was Wacko, the film that was released in 1982, was a parody of slasher movies and horror movies in general, so he was in that. Mike Kellen was probably most familiar to people listening to this podcast as the camp counselor, well, the camp owner in Sleepaway Camp. Greg Henry, who played Warren, who was ostensibly was going to be the hero, but ended up a jibbering wreck at the end of the movie, is still in lots of stuff, and he was in Sliver, and possibly most recently The Following, the TV series with Kevin Bacon, which obviously links to the whole Friday 13th thing. But if you're looking at the 7 degrees separation, there's also a kind of it's not particularly interesting, but a link between Ralph Seymour. He was in a TV series the same year called Code Red, which is coincidentally the label that put the film out on Blu-ray. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we hasn't been covered. I think that's pretty much it. So there's a couple of other little bits to talk about, but Eric?
Okay. Yeah, I just have a few more things to add. I mean, you've covered most of it there between the three of you. Jeff Lieberman gets a co-writing credit, actually, under the pseudonym Greg Irving. The character of Daniel was originally meant... What's all that rustling noise? The character of Daniel was meant to be gay in the original Tennessee Mountain Murder script. Joseph was saying, there was originally a sixth character called Eileen who was supposed to show an interest in Daniel, and then he kind of rebuffs her and it forces him to come out of the closet. And even in the last Ritual script, he was still sort of an out gay character. It was only when it became Just Before Dawn that was removed, although you can still read into it what you like, because he's kind of this fifth wheel and he doesn't really seem to show an interest in, you know, in the girls. Well, obviously they're attached, so he really shouldn't be. But the twins are named Lucas and Luther in the last Ritual script. Richard Keel, who was most famous for playing Jaws in The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, was considered for the role of the twins, and actually he was really, really interested in doing it. I don't know why it didn't pan out. You know, he certainly has the physique to pull it off, as it were. Justin, you're saying that Jeff Lieberman says it was filmed in July of 1980, but if it's to be believed that it was filmed during the Mount St. Helens eruption, that took place on May the 18th, 1980. So it was not that it makes a huge difference, but filming would seem to have been around May of 1980, which was incidentally was the same month that Friday the 13th came out in cinemas. Let's see what else. It was passed uncut by the BBFC in September of 1981 with an X certificate, so I'm assuming it got a theatrical release over here. Maybe you might be able to elaborate on that, Justin, but for its video release in October of 1986, it was cut by 7 seconds. The BBFC website doesn't list exactly what the cuts are, but I'm imagining it's probably the machete to the groin scene. Jeff Lieberman, in an interview, is quite disparaging about Friday the 13th and slasher cinema in general. In an interview he did with Diabolique magazine in 2013, and again, you said this before, he admits he had never seen Texas Chainsaw or Hills of Eyes before he made Just Before Dawn. Ralph Seymour, who plays Daniel, we'd recognise him from a film we've covered on the podcast before, Killer Party, he's in, and he's also in Ghoulies. Greg Henry, I was, like you, Justin, I was looking him up on IMDb and surprised to see how what a successful career he's had. I mean, he's not a household name, but he was in Guardians of the Galaxy last year, which was one of the monster runaway hits last summer. And he's also in the classic Brian De Palma cross-dressing slasher Raising Kane, and also in Body Double, actually, another De Palma movie. Chris Lemon went on to appear in the slasher, one of the best slasher movies of the 90s, Wishmaster. I think we'll all agree. Actually, I was going to ask you, Justin, because George Kennedy, you're probably a big fan of him, seeing as you love your disaster movies. He was in Earthquake, and he was in Airport, Airport 75, Airport 77, and Airport 79. So I was just wondering, would you, if you had to watch one George Kennedy movie, would it be Just Before Dawn, or would it be one of his 70s disaster movies?
It depends what kind of mood I was in. I think, having just watched Just Before Dawn, I would probably now I choose to watch Airport 75, only because I've just watched Just Before Dawn. So
is Airport 75 is the Karen Black one, is it?
It is the Karen Black one, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Don't forget that George Kennedy was also in one of the greatest Creepshow 2 segments of all time, yes, with the Indian.
Creepshow, I love Creepshow 2 in general.
I do too.
Yes.
I think it was really cute. I forgot to mention just about George Kennedy, the whole, you know, the thing about him talking to his horse, Agatha, and talking to his plants. So
maybe he was crazy Ralph. I take it all back.
Well, he's just kind of, it's a curious choice as a forest ranger, wasn't he? I didn't think he particularly believable, but I think he was pretty good in the role and pretty funny. The one thing that always struck me with him is his famous line, at least tell me where you're going, because if you don't come back, I know how to fill out the report. If you listen to that, it's clearly been, it sounds like they're two words, two bits of sentence have been said at different times. Because I don't know, if you hear it, it's almost like they've glued two sentences together, which is something that's kind of jumped out at me.
I must have a listen back. Yeah.
But
George Kennedy was in a 1968 film with Mike Kellen, believe it or not. Well, yeah, as if that's hard to believe. It's the Boston Strangler.
Okay.
So they'd appeared together before that. Yeah. Matthew Mungall did the makeup effects, and he also went on to work on a couple of slasher movies. One we've covered, one we've yet to cover, Pranks, a.k.a. The Dorm That Dripped Blood. And he also went on to Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge. And he also did makeup on A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, which is the one that doesn't have the girl with the big hair gets turned into a cockroach. That's part four. Yeah. And that's all the behind-the-scenes I have. Justin, did it get theatrically released in the UK?
It did, but I've never seen a poster for it on a single release. I've seen... I think I've seen it on a double bill with some kind of sexploitation film.
Oh, right.
Like female.
What's the UK art for it? The artwork?
I'm trying to remember, actually. I'm pretty sure.
The old VHS was kind of a photo of
the killer.
The killer holding the machete. It's at that top of the rope bridge, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it actually got its own. I've never seen a quad poster for it on its own. So but it was interesting about Jeff Lieberman, about him being not a fan of slasher movies, because when I interviewed him, he said one of the reasons he'd never made any more he hadn't made any more slasher movies, and I don't think he really accepts that Just Before Dawn is a slasher movie as such. But he said because he had daughters, he felt uncomfortable making Just Before Dawn, and that's why he's never made another film since. And this is when but then of course since I interviewed him, he made Satan's Little Helper, which is kind of a black sort of comedy slasher movie, really, isn't it?
I still haven't watched it. Is it any good?
Yeah, I haven't seen it for ages, but I thought it was pretty good fun. But what does he say in the interview when in 2013 he was just very dismissive, was he, of a slasher movie?
Yeah, yeah, he was just saying, oh, Just Before Dawn is far superior to Friday the 13th. It was, you know, it was lowest common denominator filmmaking. This is online. You can find it if you search for Diabolik Jeff Lieberman interview.
That's the one I read.
Yes, he was quite scathing.
Yes, definitely. He seems to have a lot of disdain for slasher movies.
He's kind of, apparently he's quite a complex individual with some unusual political views, so I hear. So, okay, right.
What does he does he think a turnip should be president and we should all wear G-strings compulsorily?
Yeah, along those lines, I think, yes.
All right, sure.
So, well, that was Just Before Dawn, I guess. Yeah, there's no dissenting voices, was there? Apart from the slight break we had with Eric about to throw himself out a window, but you know.
Yeah, and I noticed none of you talked me down. None of you talked me down.
Nathan,
I did.
Nathan was going.
Oh, sorry. Come back. But he was. But Eric. I don't know. I was detecting some not terribly sincerity in his tone.
Did I miss this?
Did you not hear?
Yeah, you did.
I'll just have to listen back.
Yeah.
Eric was going to throw himself out of his fourth story window.
Yeah, because Justin was bullying me.
Justin, how could you?
Well, Eric kept on saying...
Eric would never bully you.
Yeah.
He's saying, talk me down, make me stop doing it. And I was silent and Nathan was going, don't do it, Eric, in a very kind of half-hearted
attempt. Yeah, it was very half-hearted.
But we still have you with us, Eric, so that's just a shame. Feedback, I guess. Have we got any feedback this time? I've got a little one to pull out.
I've got a gigantic one.
Oh, do you want to go first?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, it says, I am wearing the Cat Flushing a Toilet t-shirt, the one that has a pic of you guys on it too, as I am typing up this email. That's awesome. Regarding A Night Before Easter, I really enjoyed it. Spoiler alert, I thought that April Sinclair would survive until the very end, as she was the one who told her alcoholic friend that survival story. She even broke out of quite a chokehold from the killer at the end. Sadly, she gets the axe, no pun intended, instead leaving the alcoholic as the final girl. Anyway, it was great fun. On to my next question. I'm trying to purchase all horror media you guys are on. Let me give you a list of what I have and let me know if I'm missing anything. Also, if you can go over one more time what you guys are allowed to mention about what is upcoming. So far, I have the Vinegar Syndrome releases with the Hysteria commentary, Graduation Day, Night Train to Terror, Savage Water, and Death by Invitation. 88 Films, Graduation Day with the special interview with Justin. Slice and Dice, the slasher film forever, snippets of a commentary from Justin. Puppet Master and Bloody Birthday, Justin's audio commentary. Arrow Video, Funhouse and Slaughter High with Justin's audio commentary. I do know about Vinegar Syndrome's Don't Go in the Woods with your guys' audio commentary, and also the upcoming Splatter University from 88 Films that will have a special interview with Justin. Wishing all you the best, an avid fan, Mike. And Nathan wants to say, damn you, Justin. Before we continue.
Sorry?
I said, damn you, because you are involved with Splatter University, one of the greatest films of all time.
I didn't know you were involved in that.
Yeah, I did an intro for it, like I did with Graduation Day.
Are you giving it the respect that it deserves?
No. but I'm, no.
Nathan, I think you should jump out the window now.
I should, but I'm on a first story, so I don't think it's going to matter.
Oh, okay.
I'm also doing the Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. I've done a commentary for, which is upcoming from 88 Films, and Scalps as well. I've done an intro for that.
If they do the Last Slumber Party, I need to be involved. All I ask is that they pay for my air travel and lodging over to Great Britain. Oh, and I don't stay in a hotel that's under 4 stars.
Well, that should be happening.
And I will also need food, of course. And I also need, like, some fun money, you know, for, like, traveling the countryside.
Oh, don't stop there. Would you like a houseboy to cater to your every whim as well?
Sure.
Okay, there you go.
Well, these are all the perks Justin does get when he does these.
Yeah, this is true.
I get collected from the airport in a stretch limo and then go to the Hilton on a 5-star penthouse apartment and champagne and vegan caviar and all the drugs.
They give you
and
free cat for every commentary you do.
Exactly. So it's an amazing gilded life I have.
It is. So jealous. Glamour.
Just when I thought caviar couldn't get any grosser, they have vegan caviar.
How can you have a vegan version of caviar?
They do. There's IKEA sell this kind of thing. It's like seaweed. But it's
caviar, not fish eggs.
Yes, but it's not actually caviar. It's not even sold as caviar, but it looks a bit like caviar.
Oh, so that's what it's
nicknamed.
Mush.
Nicknamed the vegan caviar.
If you leave a banana out in the sun long enough, it'll turn to black mush. You can call that caviar, vegan caviar.
Hey, well, Justin, I had a vegan chicken sandwich the other day.
Hmm.
It was actually soy and vegetables, so it wasn't real chicken. It was actually, it tasted just like chicken.
Well, there you go.
It was quite good, actually.
Well, we had yesterday takeout vegan pizza. Had 4 pizzas, all different, all with vegan cheese from a local place. So you see, we're moving on.
cheese I can comprehend.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I had a vegan burger, but it made me sick. it may have just been the brand.
It was frozen.
Brand.
Well, you should have thawed it first. Did you eat it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that might help, but I still don't think it would have helped the flavor.
Okay. Anyway, it's thrilling.
I want to try one that's fresh.
Hmm. Wow, this is scintillating.
A scintillating conversation. So we've kind of gone off slightly off topic from our... have you got any more to read out from that?
Well, actually, this guy, we didn't answer his question. He wants to know what we have, if he's missing anything that has any of us involved, and what else we could talk about that's upcoming.
Well, did he mention Night Before Easter? He did mention Night Before Easter, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he did mention it. What about Madman?
Madman, Blu-ray commentary.
Yeah.
We haven't done that yet.
We haven't done that yet. That's coming soon. And there's another one, we can't say what it is yet, that will be coming probably late this summer.
Is that the uncut Friday 13th Part 2 for Paramount?
Yeah, that's
that one. Yeah. Which we all have a screener of that at the moment.
It's really good, actually, isn't it?
It's really good.
I cannot believe
the gore effects when he hits him in the face with a machete.
I know.
And in the wheelchair, when people see this, it's just going to be great.
Yeah, and it's not even April Fool's yet, but
I know.
But hopefully, a few more in the works.
He's not missing any though in his list, is he? That you've been all logged in, Justin.
Has he got Video Nasties 2 on his list?
No, it's not. So that'd be another one to look for.
Yeah, Video Nasties: The Definitive Guide, Volume 2. Justin is on.
Mm. Was it 88 films?
No,
Nucleus. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few out there, Mike, to seek out.
Yes.
Oh, and I don't know if you have Justin's book, so you should, if you don't have that, you should pick that too.
Anal Paprika 13.
Yes.
Oh, well, there's that too.
Is that on IMDb yet? Let me have a look.
Oh, God. It better not be.
Oh, my God, it really is this time.
No, it's not.
I don't know, I'm not looking.
Eric.
I'm gonna look.
Thrill.
Have a look. No, it's not.
Have you looked? God. Oh, Night Before Easter, Gory Graduation, Bloody Homecoming, and...
Yeah, nickname Inga. He is a resident and citizen of Ireland. Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about of Ireland. You saw that that trailer.
Oh, yeah.
For the Irish.
Yeah. Oh, that movie looks awesome. I can't wait.
What was it called again?
Is it Jack Hammer Massacre or something? No, was it... Let me have a look. Again, this is the scintillating thing.
Scintillating searching on the internet audio segment.
Eric, are you involved in the film industry in Ireland?
Hello? Hello. We've lost everyone. Back in 1 second.
What are we talking about?
We're back. Are we back? Sorry, I don't know what's happening. It's one of those. What?
Yeah. Sorry.
Go on.
Nothing. I'd forgotten where we were before we had our Skype meltdown.
Okay. Well,
we are in feedback.
We are in feedback. Well, you probably yes. remember that.
Yes.
You probably, where you
oh, we were
to,
talking about that Irish slasher movie.
Yes.
And Justin
yes.
looked up the title.
And then I crashed the whole internet like Kim Kardashian. So I'm
oh,
not
yeah.
going to...
With your bottom? Did you crash it with your bottom?
No. I tried to look something up on my iPad at the same time, and I think I may have crashed my internet connection anyway, so I won't do that. But there's some Irish slasher movie which looks awful. And so it's right up Nathan Street. We know that Eric's probably going to be the killer, aren't you, Eric?
Let me see. It's called Skeleton Crew with a K.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Well, we might cover that at some point, but is there anything left in that email from Mike, Nathan?
No. That
was it. Okay, well, thank you, Mike. And you've probably got the lone person in the T-shirt.
I have a hoodie.
You got a hoodie. That's right. I've seen you in a hoodie. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you can. Can people still buy merchandise?
Yeah, I think no one ever really bought one. I think maybe like two people purchased them, but I think they're on Cafe Press somewhere.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, you know, make us millionaires. You can see it's on the catwalk in Paris this year. Right. Well, thank you, Nathan. Eric, do you have anything?
Yes, I have one here. It is from Mark, and he says, "Dear Cat Flushers, hope this mail finds you in good cheer. You and your fortnightly broadcasts have kept me playfully amused now for many years. As a quartet, you are truly the Beatles of horror podcasts. I'll let you figure out which one of you is Ringo."
Eric.
It's Justin. Justin.
Eric.
Justin.
Eric. No, actually,
Justin.
Eric's more Yoko Ono.
Don't want to be Yoko Ono. Recently, I have found that the cry of "it's not a slasher film" has regularly been heard during your discussions. Notable controversial examples from your history include Predator and Rabid Grannies, neither of which were my choice, might add. It seems as though you require some kind of system that will enable this argument to be put to bed altogether. So I have come up with a modest proposal for you. During your next Algonquin round table section, perhaps you would consider doing the following. Each of you must take it in turn to discuss two specific tropes or elements that you feel must feature in a slasher movie. Once you are finished, you should have 8 statements of fact and can then operate as an unarguable checklist for any future not as slasher discussions. The rule must then be applied that in order to qualify within the subgenre, any title you pick must tick off at least 5 of these statements. I believe the system should work unless Eric attempts to slip must star Patrick Swayze and must feature the music of Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes into his picks, which I think
which
I will
very
do.
Possible.
Yeah. Bon chance, Mark. Well, thank you for that, Mark. That's a good idea.
Yes, thank
you,
Mark.
I don't think Rabid Grannies would have qualified if we'd had that criteria set out.
No, and also...
Well, neither would several things we picked.
And also probably a future pick by a certain somebody probably won't qualify either. So that would, I think it's a good idea. I think maybe if Nathan's up for it, maybe that would be a good thing to discuss slasher movie tropes on the next show, which we'll be saying what is shortly. But I think unfortunately, although it's a good idea, it might be that there's certain someone whose name rhymes with Moses likes to choose things that sometimes might be a bit controversial. I know his next pick is not going to be, is going to be, well, probably, possibly his most controversial pick of all.
Yes.
Yes. So we'll see. But yeah, maybe we can have that as a talking point for next time. So thank you, Mark. Joseph, do you have anything? Or Joseph may be away for a minute because he is possibly otherwise engaged. He's at work, so he's having to do so. But I do have one here, so I will read out mine. Here we go. It was just a little short one. It's from Mike again. I don't know if it's a different Mike.
But anyway. No, mine was from Mark.
Oh, Mark. Oh, yeah. Okay. Whose was yours from, Nathan?
Mike.
Oh, Mike. Sorry.
Yeah, Eric.
Right.
God.
I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
There's no need to take the Lord's name in vain on Sabbath day as well.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. So I forgot I was talking to Mr. Catholic. Right. I was wondering if you guys have seen any of these three horror gems. Highway to Hell. What do we know? You don't even know what they are yet. Highway to Hell, 1991. Haunted Ween, 1991. The Spider Labyrinth, 1988. It says, if you haven't seen them, I'm so happy to introduce you to these, in my opinion, classics. If you have, then I'm sorry, as said in the voices don't go into the woods, and that's Mike. So I've seen at least one of those.
So have I, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen Spider Labyrinth.
That's the one I've seen, yes.
I've seen Haunted Ween.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys have asked where I was, but I got called away again, so sorry.
That's okay. We did.
We were called away.
But the professionals that we are, we carried on.
Yeah.
So
I don't even think I've heard but like 20% of this episode. I'm actually going to have to listen back for once to see what happened.
Well, we've got this bit of feedback. It was saying, have any of us seen Highway to Hell, 1991, Haunted Ween, also 91, and The Spider Labyrinth? And me and Eric have seen Spider Labyrinth, which is the Italian one, isn't it?
It's an Italian movie, yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of quirky.
I've seen all three, so there you go.
Oh, have you? Okay. Nathan's seen Haunted Ween. So what was Highway to Hell?
That was the one with the guy who played Jason in Jason Lives in it, wasn't it? CJ Graham?
Oh, I don't know.
I think so. I think I remember it from Fangoria, but I never got to see it.
Okay. Is that the one with the kind of the satanic highway cop?
Yeah, and he's got sort of carvings in his skin.
Yes, I've never seen it, but I remember seeing photos of it in Fangoria.
Mm.
So, but Nathan...
Nathan, what is any good?
Well, I haven't seen that one. I've saw Haunted
Wayne. Sorry. All right. And so Joseph, is any good? Joseph's gone again.
He's been called away. Haunted Wayne was entertaining. It's really cheaply made, you can tell. I mean, it's not like... I wouldn't call it a good movie, but it's my kind of movie.
Yeah, well, that's all we need to know.
Yes.
We're still dreading. How many more weeks is it till Nathan's pick that he's been...
Well, we have...
It's about 6 weeks.
I'm so excited about this pick, you guys have no idea. Probably my most anticipated movie choice so far.
Yes.
Yeah. Aren't you guys glad you brought me in a few episodes into this show?
Yeah. Thank you for the gift of Crazy Fat Ethel Part 2.
Y'all would never have known me if I hadn't have done,
Well, that's true. I think your double bill will make for an entertaining episode.
Yes.
It will. I think it will.
Yes. But we have got a certain date on the calendar coming up for the next episode, which is a very big hint, which we'll talk about.
And I've just mentioned it, actually. Yes.
Oh, yes, you have. Yes. Well, I suppose we can mention it now, really, can't we? We're going to be covering, as it's Friday 13th, the first of three Friday 13ths this year.
Yes, another one coming up in March. Yeah.
Yes, so we're going to be exhuming Jason for Jason Lives, Friday 13th, part 6, which I think is going to be quite an entertaining episode. So that's coming up next on Hysteria Continues.
Where are we? I got called away again. These people, I swear to fucking Christ, it's Sunday. Go home.
It's like Super Bowl Sunday. They should go home and watch football.
No kidding. Fuck. Yeah.
I can't wait for the Super Bowl. I hope the Patriots win.
I don't know if we've passed over feedback, but I have feedback. I don't know where we are in the episode, so I apologize.
We're just waiting. It's perfect timing, Joseph, because you can go see nicely into your one.
Okay, unless someone comes in here, waving their dick around, here's my feedback. This is from Ara Alishan. I think he's Mike's brother. He says, "Hello again. I've been meaning to write in since my last correspondence back in September, but I've been rather busy investigating the rather sultry Steve Christie and Pamela Voorhees theory you proposed a while back. Needless to say, my findings have been inconclusive. Going back to my previous email, I really must recommend The Roost from 2005. House of the Devil and The Innkeepers are both much better films, but I believe you would all really appreciate Ty West's earliest feature. Unfortunately, I didn't really care for The Sacrament. There was nothing wrong with it per se, but I suppose I personally prefer bat-infested barns, bad babysitting gigs, and the ghost of Madeline O'Malley over a retelling of the Jonestown Massacre. Moving on, I really have to recommend Midnight Movie again from 2008. It's an entertaining supernatural slasher, and I would love to hear your impressions. On to Gory Graduation. Joseph and Nathan, I really admire the Indiegogo page the two of you have set up for this project and am more than happy to contribute to the cause. I passed the word along to my brother Mike and believe he's made a contribution as well. As for my perk, I had a very difficult time narrowing it down to just one film. He selected to pick a film on our show, which is why are your other listeners better move fast. But for now, my personal selection for this fine podcast is the criminally underrated, and I'm going to leave that out, and you'll have to find that out later, what he picked, which is one of my all-time favorites. Is it a slasher? Ask the Predator. Your pal from the City of Angels, Aura. P.S. I absolutely love your next and the guest, and can't wait to see Simon Barrett and Adam Wingard's next collaboration. P.P.S. My wife and I are excitedly expecting our first daughter in May. We've narrowed down our list of potential names to Erica, Josephine, Justine, and Nathanielina. Thoughts?
Erica. Oh, Nathanielina. No, obviously Nathanielina.
Well, if you are really expecting, congratulations. But yes. If you're not, then, well, congratulations. So, but yeah, tell us what you decide. But she could have a sort of quadruple monikered, you know, like one of, like, who was that? You know, that very strange looking Spanish princess who died, the one who danced, and she was about 95, and she had about 14 names. The one with the big lips.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, Frida?
Sade?
No, didn't you see? She had hair like a crash helmet, like a perm, and she had big lips.
Oh,
and
she danced. Stefania Stella.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember her name now. I'm not going to look it up because last time I tried to Google it, everything, I broke the internet. So,
have you announced what we're doing next time?
We have. Yes, Friday the 13th, part 6. Yes. Extravaganza, another Friday 13th extravaganza. And we're coming to the end of the good ones, aren't we? We're going to be right, actually. We're going to have the new blood and also Jason Takes Manhattan this year as well. So yes. A lot to fit
wow.
in. Will Arla's, would we appreciate Arla's pick without actually saying what it is?
I think we all would, yes, actually.
Okay, well, we can tell us off air, and also we can discuss the motivation for the guest off air as well. So, I think that is about it, unless we've got any other feedback.
No, that's it. Unless you want to play the feedback jingle.
Have we got one?
Unless you want to play the feedback jingle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that
Joseph gives the details.
Oh, yes. Okay. So if you want to write in, especially with your thoughts on Friday the 13th, part 6, we are going to be recording 3 episodes in a row because a scheduling conflicts, Eric. we will. So if you do want to get back to us about Friday the 13th, part 6, then do it in the next week. But this is how to do so.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Yes, so keep them coming, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have anything else left to say, or are we all talked out?
We should skadoot.
Skadoot,
yeah.
Okay, well, if you, hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll see you round, it's Crystal Lake, isn't it? Part 6.
Forest Green.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll see you in a date in Forest Green in a couple of weeks' time. Yeah. So, exactly. So, and we're playing out with some of the ambient music from Just Before Dawn, and maybe a little bit
John
of Blondie. Yes, well, I thought I might do a little bit of both. How about that?
Because both are brilliant.
Yes, okay. Right.
Just like me.
No, well, anyway, thank you for listening.
I'm brilliant.
And we'll get, we're going to get Eric to call the Samaritans
later, just to make sure he doesn't throw himself out the window after the episode. Because we're obviously very worried about you. We might have to do an intervention.
I think you might.
Yeah, or not. Because I've got a lunch date, so might have to be tomorrow. But anyway, Eric, graveyard. You'll still be around. Sorry?
Is your lunch date in a graveyard?
No. Anyway, well, hopefully it hasn't been too Skype-issued for this one. Got a little bit better towards the end, didn't it?
It did.
But now I'm rambling. So we will bind you.
Play the music.
To do. Yes, okay. So say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Until next time.
Bye. Does tofu taste nice when you eat it off a tombstone?
Would you rather watch the Super Bowl, Joseph, or the last slumber party twice in a row?
The problem with that is that Eric doesn't have like the capacity to, you know, put that up his rectum.
Pardon?
Would it fit in Tina Turner?
I like Justin's pardon.
Pardon me. Do you have any Grey Poupon?